It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 87% always is my co-host.
Drop down again.
It's Sunday night, man. I asked you Friday night when you were coming over, and it is now 7:30 Sunday night. You lost points.
Yeah, all right. Well, I got nothing but time to make them up.
You also lost points because we were going to do this topic last week, and you didn't get around to it.
In my defense, I have like four jobs right now.
That's true. So, you own a store and you have jobs.
Yeah, I've been busy. It's been rough.
Yeah, but the main thing we're going to talk about this week is Luke Cage, which I think everyone has seen by now. It crashed Netflix.
Yeah, they didn't say it crashed Netflix, but it crashed the day it came out. So
for 2 hours, both in the United States and Europe. We actually mentioned it on the show last week because it was happening. But Netflix never releases ratings.
Yeah, they're very secretive.
They don't say who watches what, but the only thing we do know is Orange is the New Black is the most popular show on, and they said Daredevil did very, very well. So I think this is at least doing Daredevil numbers.
Yeah, I don't know how much I was looking forward to this show. Out of all the Defenders, this is probably the, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Daredevil, and Iron Fist. This is probably the one I looked forward to the least, just because Daredevil is usually pretty good. Like, the monthly comic's good.
Well, Daredevil's the most A-list character they have. Daredevil's the most A-list character they have on television.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agreed. Jessica Jones, I liked the initial run of Alias, so I was excited to see that adapted. Iron Fist, I'm hoping he punches a dragon in the heart to get superpowers, and that's the best origin of a superhero ever. So that I'm really looking forward to. Luke Cage is one of those guys where it's like, he's a good character. I think he has a place, but he's a guy where it's just like, yeah, I care about Luke Cage when he's teaming up with Iron Man. Iron Fist.
Because Iron Man's also good.
Yeah, he could team up with Iron Man.
He was in the Avengers.
Or if he's like a guest star in another book. And even Bendis on New Avengers when it started. That was kind of like my first introduction to Luke Cage.
He put both Jessica Jones and Luke Cage on the Avengers.
Yeah, but I mean, when his run first started, he put him on right away, and he was a big voice in the book. And it was kind of like the perfect thing at the time that was needed to kind of kickstart Avengers again. But other than that, it's like, I don't really know much about Luke Cage. I have the general gist of it, his origin and everything. I wouldn't have said Luke Cage is going to crash Netflix. That wouldn't have been a thing I would have predicted.
Right. I was kind of in your position where Luke Cage as a character, I find kind of embarrassing. There have been good things done with him, but his origins go back to, like Power Man, Hero for Hire.
Yeah.
Is problematic because they created this character to kind of just tap into blaxploitation at the time.
Yeah.
Show movies like Shaft
Pam
Grier movies.
Most of the characters that come out of the 70s, Iron Fist included, were basically Marvel Comics trying to capitalize on what was hot at the time.
Right, because Kung Fu movies were big. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Evel Knievel was really big, so they brought Ghost Rider back as a guy that rides a motorcycle.
Right. So Ghost Rider's a guy that rides motorcycles. Power Man's as close as to blaxploitation and Shaft as Marvel could get without getting sued. Iron Fist is based off all the Kung Fu movies that were really big at the time. Shang-Chi is literally Bruce Lee. That's who Shang-Chi's supposed to be. So it's like a lot of those characters that came out of that were, I mean, Misty Knight, same thing. She was based on the same kind of like the girls in Shaft
Pam
and
Greer.
All that stuff, like the big hair and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as
like
far
Coffee,
as
Foxy Brown.
Foxy Brown, yeah.
I don't know how many original blaxploitation movies.
Oh, I don't know anything
seen.
About this.
Oh,
stuff.
I've seen a bunch. But Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
With Pam Grier was really was really a tribute to the movies she made, and she was basically Misty Knight in those movies.
Yeah, and that's kind of the... Like, comics have a very long, bad history with minority characters.
Well, they're usually written and drawn by white guys. And that's like... And which is why... Mike Drucker loved Luke Cage, to the fact that, like, we gave him the first Luke Cage figure that Marvel Legends made was the classic, like, yellow shirt, tiara, bracelets. We gave it to him as, like, a gift, like, yeah. at an event because he loved Luke Cage. But he loved Luke Cage because it was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because it was nerdy white guys in the 70s trying to act like a cool black guy. And it's, you know, it's the kind of thing, it's like what you'd call a Wigga today. You know, yeah. It's like the you know, white guys that try to talk like hip-hop. It's embarrassing. And yeah. that's what those comics were, because there weren't a lot of African-Americans working in comics then.
Right, and it's kind of like when they invented Black Panther in the 60s, I give Marvel a lot of credit for that, because they, I think it's called Afro... science or something. I'm so uneducated. There's a term for futuristic African civilizations, like black Africa
technology.
Yeah, it's like Afro science or Afro something. Black Panther is based on older stories that had that idea of a civilization in Africa with the most advanced technology, kind of like an Atlantis type thing, where this ancient technology,
right, Wakanda.
Or whatever. Yeah, Wakanda, basically.
Which you see at the very end of Civil War.
Yeah, and I will give Marvel all the credit in the world for creating Black Panther at a time, I mean, this was the 1960s.
Yep.
Race relations are pretty horrific now, but again, we're not having race rights yet.
Right.
Again.
I mean, this is a time of Watts. This is a time of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Right. This is like the height of it, you know?
Like,
so
like ball of confusion.
Yeah. And you know, and I don't necessarily know the origins. I think the Black Panther political organization and Black Panther, the character, are a coincidence.
Yeah, but they are around the same time.
They are. And I don't think one's named after the other. I think it was just a coincidence. In fact, Marvel at one point changed the name of the Black Panther to the Cole Tiger.
Yes.
And then...
Because of
the Black Panther, because I think they were...
Cole Tiger is a terrible name.
It's terrible. And they did change
the
it back
Panther
to their credit.
Would have been better.
Yeah, and then the Avengers met, like, another Black Panther from another dimension, and he was called the Cole Tiger, and it was very stupid. But regardless...
It's never a good idea to, like, change your life based on who you met in another dimension.
Right.
That's like Nightwing. They found out that Nightwing... There was a Superman character called Nightwing in, like, the Silver Age, so they were like, oh, Superman told me all about Nightwing.
Who's like a hero in Kandor or some shit like
yeah,
this?
It's like, yeah, it's like that's, you know what, when you're raised in Gotham City and you decide to become your own vigilante,
yeah,
the last thing you want in that story is I'll go ask Superman what to do.
Right. But as far as like so comic books in general have a long, awful, dark history of drawing horrific stereotypes of the Japanese and the Germans during World War II.
You get a
blacks
lot of,
through 95% of the history of comic books.
Like, look at sidekick characters. Like, Will Eisner was an absolute genius in Spirit and ahead of his time, but there's some of those racial caricatures are hard to take.
Yeah.
There's a character in Green Lantern named Pie Face.
Yeah. And...
And he answers to it.
Right. And it's not like they're buddies or whatever. It's like, it's really crazy. But anyway, so like Black Panthers are really probably one of the best example that I can think of. Like I said, I'm far from an expert. I'm highly ignorant when it comes to the race and all this stuff, right? I'm a privileged white person. But Black Panther to me has always been a good character because of what he's based on. Luke Cage,
well,
I think,
had dignity right away.
Dignity right away. They don't play games with... He didn't, you know, it's the man, self-made man. He's one of the smartest, richest dudes in the world. Like, he's a good guy from the beginning. It's like all this
and he's
awesome
not,
stuff.
And you get that Wakanda and the technology of Wakanda right away.
Right.
And he's also not what comic books tend to do when they're desperate is black guy you already know.
Right.
You know, like Black Lightning is just, hey, let's take Electro and make him black.
Right.
Or, you know, Some characters worked, some characters haven't worked. It was like, let's kill off the hero and bring in another guy who's a minority. I mean, they were doing that 10 years ago.
They do that a lot now. But with Luke Cage specifically, it's like, I wouldn't say it's a valid attempt when that character came out, but I think this show, I think, really hit home. It's a thing I didn't really think about until I kind of started going online and reading all this, like, crazy backlash. Like, people are... They're like, there's too many black people in this show.
That is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. And people, and a lot of black fans I've been noticing have been posting like, yeah, now you know how we feel.
Yeah, because it's...
Because 95% of superheroes are white.
Right. And they're blonde-haired, blue-eyed white guys named Chris.
Yeah.
You know?
Unless you're on the X-Men.
Yeah.
You're not going to see a black woman.
Right. So I think the show and the creators of the show, I think, are African-American. And I think they
are. The crew is almost entirely African-American.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a huge difference because it's coming from a place of authenticity in the way that the old 70s comics were not.
Yes. And I think that's the big difference is Luke Cage, I think, in concept is a good character. But I think in that it's the same thing. It's like if Wonder Woman's a good example. Wonder Woman is mostly written by dudes. Wonder Woman's, in my opinion, usually at its best when it's written by a woman. Gail Simone, great run on Wonder Woman. There's, you know, Birds of Prey is a book Gail Simone writes. Yes, let's have female characters being written by female creators. I wouldn't have that rule exclusively because there's a lot of great female writers that can write male characters and vice versa and all that other stuff.
Right. We have a Muslim woman writing Ms. Marvel now, and it's fantastic.
And it's my favorite monthly book right now at Marvel. So there's a lot of arguments to be made back and forth about what race and who should be writing what and how things should be written. And I just want to get to a point in our culture, which is inevitable because of science, that white people won't be the majority, not even in the sense of population percentage, but in industries, right? White people are largely in charge of everything right now in America.
What's that? Is it, it's either a Louis C.K. joke or a Bill Burr joke, but I think it's a Louis C.K. joke where they say, like, in New York, white people are about 40%.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's the perfect white person thing to walk through Manhattan going, hey, look at all these minorities here.
Right.
I'm the only majority in this place.
Yeah. And it's, they're hopefully we'll get to an equilibrium in our culture where, you know, this kind of like, hey, what's with all these black people in this black superhero show? Because it's like, there's like four white people in this entire show, and a lot of them are like...
One of them is playing a Puerto Rican.
Yeah, that guy's Italian, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was a meme going around. The guy plays Shades, who looks like all of the Beastie Boys as one guy.
Yeah. Then, like, the corrupt cop is a white guy.
Yeah, Frank Wally, who was the guy who asked Samuel Jackson what in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And also played Robbie Krieger in the Oliver Stone Doors movie.
Okay. And then, end of list. That is all the white people I can name in that show.
And I'm totally fine. I think it makes it a more interesting show because, you know what? I don't want to see another Daredevil. They're going to make another Daredevil. They're
right.
going to make Punisher next. They're making Iron Fist. And, you know, Iron Fist is probably more problematic because Iron Fist is a white blonde guy being a kung fu master.
Right.
Although they showed the trailer. I did see the trailer. The trailer came out today because now New York Comic Con, I'm sure we'll get into it. This is the first year I think New York Comic Con has become like San Diego.
It's where huge.
They're waiting. It's a gigantic crowd. I mean, it seems like it's 10 times the size as when I used to go. When I lived in New York, I went the last first couple of years I moved here, and then
you were going to New York when you were in Chicago. You'd like fly back to the.
I would fly back for that. Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's a nice weekend. It's a long weekend.
Yeah, and you know, I would see everybody and go. But it's gotten so big that now it's worthwhile for the studios to make announcements there.
Yeah.
You know, there was an announcement. There was a lot of announcements about the Netflix panel. They released the Iron Fist trailer, and then they confirmed that Sigourney Weaver is playing the villain in Defenders.
And they haven't said who, right?
They haven't said who. There's a weird theory that she's Mephisto.
Yeah. I'm all about that. Yeah, that's however they want to do it. They have my total confidence.
And I will let Sigourney Weaver play anything.
Yeah.
Because she's always great. She's great as a villain.
They could remake Jaws and I'd cast her as the shark. You know?
Yeah.
That's how good she is.
Have you seen Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah.
She's at the, spoilers to that, she's at the very, very end of that, and she's amazing.
Yeah. She's good.
Yeah. She's been great since Alien.
Yeah. Yeah. There isn't really anything, I mean, like Galaxy Quest. She's awesome in Galaxy Quest.
Yeah. I don't know why they haven't made a sequel to Galaxy Quest.
It's coming.
It's crazy, but the plot is so much there. The plot, in my mind, and this is my own personal fan fiction, but in my mind, the premise is that there's a Galaxy Quest Next Generation and they've hired a whole new cast. And how do these guys take having like that their level of fame taken away?
Right.
Especially when they've actually been into space. There's your movie.
Right. It's not hard to think of that. You know what I mean? It's like you basically just look at what
But
Star
Alan Rickman's dead.
Yeah.
Ah, it's a shame.
It's a shame, man. Yeah, so maybe it won't happen.
Yeah, but with Luke Cage, I mean, I kind of disagree with you that he's a good character. I think they've done good stuff with him lately, and they're turning him into one. But like, he was even hard to describe because he was one of those guys who was just like, well, he's just a black superhero. Because Renee walked in and out of it because I binged it. As I told the story last week, I got food poisoning last week. So I had a lot of time in bed. So I just ran through the whole thing. I finished it in a weekend. So Renee was in and out. She wasn't binging it with me. But she came in. And she's like, so I don't know anything about Luke Cage. What are his powers? I'm like, oh, well, you know, he's like Superman, except he can't fly or have X-ray vision or heat vision. And he's not fast. I'm like, he's just strong.
Yeah.
He's strong and invulnerable in that. He's like the Tick. He has the powers of the Tick.
Yeah, he's pretty much, I mean,
there's nothing even original in his power set.
Well, they play up his, the unbreakable skin is his deal.
Yeah, that's just invulnerability.
No, but I think it's a little different with him because they've done some cool stuff with it where like Luke Cage will have like, somebody will induce like a heart attack in Luke Cage and then they have to do a surgery. And it's like, okay, well, how do you perform on a guy that has unbreakable skin?
And that happens both in Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And because he takes a shot to the face, which gives him like a brain
shotgun,
trauma.
Yeah.
And then that does happen in this.
Right.
Now, I don't know.
Oh,
are
yes.
you there yet?
Because so I think we're going
to episode 8, you said?
We're going to do spoilers.
We'll do spoilers even for you because you haven't finished it.
So I'm up to episode 8. The last thing that happens is his brother, who's Diamondback, I guess.
Right. Diamondback's in it now.
Yeah. Shoots him and he falls in a garbage truck. And the garbage truck drives away and the episode ends. That's the last thing I saw.
Yeah. What you're going to see is, again, like a kind of surgery.
Yeah.
Of like, how do you operate on Luke Cage?
Yeah, and stuff like that I think is interesting. And I think he's a good character in the sense where there's a place for a character like Luke Cage. Not the blaxploitation guy in the yellow blouse with like a tiara.
Which they do.
They do, which is, I do appreciate when they do stuff
like
that.
It was a nice nod to it.
It's cool throwaways.
The one thing that bothered me was he looked perfect except he had this big beard. And then I was like, why didn't they just have him clean shaven for that scene? And then I realized, well, his goatee is probably real.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have 3 weeks off to grow his goatee back.
Right.
So I just cover up his goatee with a big beard.
Yeah. And I know he didn't have the beard originally in like the 70s, but I kind of like the beard because I think that's what they're doing in that Cage book that just came out.
Genndy Chodorkovsky?
Yeah. He might have a beard in that. I can't remember. I just read it today. You'd think I know, but
that thing has been in production for years and years because he never finished it because he was doing, I think he started it back when he was doing Clone Wars because he did the first series of Clone Wars. This was after Samurai Jack. And he did the 2D Clone Wars, and then they did the 3D Clone Wars, and then he did both Hotel Transylvania movies.
Oh.
That's all his animation. And now he's making a Samurai Jack movie. So he was like doing this comic in his spare time, and as we know from many Hollywood guys that do a comic in their spare time, that comic never finishes.
Yeah, it's never going to come out. It's never going to get finished.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of the minority superhero working in his neighborhood where everyone knows his name, the guy doesn't wear a mask, he is the hero of the people. There isn't really any other character in Marvel like Luke Cage in that sense.
Right.
And where everyone else has a secret identity, they have a mask.
Well, it's Jessica Jones, but she's a little quieter about her powers.
Right, and she's a recent character. Luke Cage has been around for a long time. I mean, he's been
around 40, 50
years.
And that's been the aim of these Netflix shows. They're all street-level characters who don't have much of a secret identity. They don't have a big power set, which is also good for television.
Yeah.
Because we're at the point now where every time Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tries to do a real superhero, their reach exceeds their grasp. I mean, they're doing Ghost Rider now, which we talked about, and I watched this week's episode, it's like they really save those skull shots because they don't have the budget for it.
Yeah.
And when they happen, they're not as good as the Nicolas Cage movies.
Right. In terms of the effects.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I like the character Luke Cage. And like I said, I think it's the character in its original inception was all the things we said it did. It's it's close to Shaft and blaxploitation is it's what it's based on. This show seems like it whoever wrote and directed and all that stuff, I don't know any of these people, it really kind of captured all that in a bottle. They bottled what works about Luke Cage and made the show work to the point where it's like I said, it's a character I never particularly cared for. I like the idea of the character, but I've never read a monthly Luke Cage book. This show is an excellent... It's like, this is how you'd write a monthly Luke Cage comic. The best part of the series so far that I've seen, like I said, I'm only 8 episodes in, is he's like, all right, I'm going to fuck up all of Cottonmouth's stuff. So he runs up on like a bunch of guys that are selling Justin Hammer weapons. And he walks up and they're all like trading their guns and look at him. And he's like, do I even got to say it? And all the guys just scatter like cockroaches. And he like walks up to the one dude who he's fought a couple of times. And he's like, he grabs a gun. He just bends it. He's like, Cottonmouth's done. He's like, you got to get another line of work. And that just that casual, the way he walked up.
It was like a Batman moment.
Yeah. And there's another scene like it where he goes to, I think it's like the Puerto Rican gang. He goes to the Puerto Rican gang. They're in like a gym. And all the guys, like, he's beating everybody up, and a bunch of dudes pull their guns on him. And he's like, do you guys not know who I am? And I like that idea of a superhero who's just like, I'm Luke Cage. Stay out of Harlem. These blocks, this neighborhood is my neighborhood. It's under my protection. Daredevil's got Hell's Kitchen. The Avengers have Midtown, whatever.
There's a lot of mention of that. They use Turk in this.
Yeah, and I thought that was a cool touch.
I thought that was, too, because Turk is a Frank Miller character from the Daredevil run, and he's in Daredevil.
Yeah, a lot.
But then he mentions, he's like, yeah, I just decided to come uptown. People are like, what are you doing up here? And then at one point, he's just, I don't know if you got to that point. At one point, he's just like, I'm going back to Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, Cottonmouth, like, throws a fucking guy off a roof.
Yeah.
And he's like.
Oh, yeah, and he just sees it.
He's on the roof, and they're like, how'd you get up here? He's like.
Where's my money?
I can get anywhere or something. And it's just like, sure, Turk. But so that's the idea, that idea of this guy who just kind of owns it, and he owns who he is, his neighborhood. He's not hiding behind a mask. He's not dressing up in like a flashy costume. It's a cool way to do a superhero that isn't as ridiculous as, you know, all right, let's spend an entire season coming up with how we're going to get Daredevil into like a red costume with horns on it, you know, or get Punisher a skull t-shirt and make it make sense. You know, it's. Like I said, that stuff with Luke Cage, like I said, as far as I've seen, really worked.
Well, and especially with now, Luke Cage doesn't have much of a signature look. Like, they kept yellow because that's what he originally had, but he's like, he walks around in a yellow t-shirt. I just pulled out the Marvel Legends figure, which was a San Diego exclusive when he was in Thunderbolts. I don't know if he ever got a mass release, but I had that out while I was watching the Luke Cage show, and it's like, he's just a guy in, like, black pants and a shirt. And then they had to do something, so they gave him, like, these crazy-ass, like, sci-fi-looking gauntlets and, like, giant boots.
Yeah.
Just to try to do something, because he's just, like, he's just a bald black guy with a goatee, and they found the perfect guy to be that.
Yeah,
And they're having him wear just a hoodie in
the
show.
And the guy can act, like, he acts. He's really good. They didn't just grab a huge dude.
He's in Jessica Jones, and I didn't care about him. I'm like, yeah, that guy looks like Luke Cage. And he didn't do anything that impressed me. But in this show, like, once he had the spotlight on him, he was great.
He's good, yeah, and he can carry a show. You know, and that's the thing, you know, talking about, like, Luke Cage's look, you know, that original costume's pretty terrible. We might have mentioned this on the show before. Dwayne McDuffie's, like, one of, I think, mutually our favorite writers, both in TV and comics.
Yeah, he wrote a lot of Justice League Unlimited.
Yep. Damage Control was his. Yeah, he's one of the founders of Milestone. Static Shock.
He did Justice League for a little while. The comic. He did this great run on Fantastic Four, which when it ended, I was like, "Why would you get rid of this guy?" But apparently, he was only there because Mark Millar needed 8 months to start his run.
Yeah,
so they just had him do fill-in issues,
and it was good.
But it was so good, I didn't realize
that was when they replaced Sue and Reed leave for a second honeymoon, and Black Panther and Storm come in and take their place. So the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, which
Four
initially
Black
I was like, eh, but then.
I don't mind change up like
But
that,
it's part though. Of the story because yeah. Reed and Sue come back, and then the six of them are involved.
Right.
So it was always in the planning. But it was so good, I thought it was a run, and really, he was just doing a couple of fill-in issues.
Yeah, and they were great. And he's one of those guys, he's on a lot of the commentary of a lot of these superhero DVDs and my documentaries and stuff, and he had a great line. And he was talking about Luke Cage, and he had his two problems with Luke Cage. When he was a kid, he said, as a young Black man reading comics, you know, a teenager, a kid, you know, he kind of read whatever he can get his hands on that had Black characters in it. You know, so we talked a little bit about, like, Will Eisner's The Spirit, the sidekick. I don't know the character's name, but he said it. You know, he was drawn in with such racism it.
Right, and it's not that Will Eisner was racist. It's just that was the 40s. You know, there were still white people in blackface. It's horribly offensive today.
It's crazy.
Will Eisner didn't draw it like Trump. I hate black people, so here's one, and look how stupid he looks.
Right, I mean, Ebony White is the character's name. And they were drawing him. He looked like a gargoyle. I mean, you wouldn't even recognize him as like a human character. And he said a modern audience wouldn't really understand that. But then he was talking about Luke Cage, and he said, you know, no one growing up ever talked like Luke Cage with this, like, sweet Christmas and shit. Right. And that's obviously because, like, white people don't know anything about black culture and are trying to write it a thing they don't know about. And he said the second thing he really didn't like is part of Luke Cage's original costume was a belt that was a chain, and I think he had chains on his wrists
before the gauntlets
or whatever. And his line was like, what self-respecting black man would dress his chains as part of his costume? Because it's like reference to slavery and imprisonment and all this stuff. And, you know, so he was a really, really well educated, smart guy writing comics that as a kid was still trying to make this Luke Cage character work for himself. You know what right. I mean? Where he was trying to get into the spirit of it or go with it, you know?
The other thing that bothered me was Hero for Hire was like, he just came right out and he said, well, I'm a mercenary.
Right.
And like, he was not doing it for noble reasons at all. It was like, it was almost kind of saying like, well, I guess the only way like a black guy from Harlem would be a superhero was if you paid him to be one.
Right.
Which bothered me even as a white guy. And there's this crazy issue, which I always go back to, of Dr. Doom hires Luke Cage for a job and then stiffs him, which in this age of Trump is very timely. this rich despot that stiffs a guy on like $5,000.
Stiffs a minority.
And then Luke Cage like follows him back to Latveria to get his like $5,000. And there's a panel, which I posted, and I will probably use this as the image for this podcast. And it's Dr. Doom going, when I heard there was a crazy black man driving the Fantastic Car, I knew it must be you. And Luke Cage goes, where's my money, honey?
Yeah.
Which is like what Turk does in this show. And there's a couple of issues where Thing quits the Fantastic Four, and they get Luke Cage to replace him, but only because they're going to pay him.
They pay him.
He lasts two issues.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that always bothered me. The other thing that bothered me was, being a comic fan in your early 80s, as we were saying, Bowerman was created on the blaxploitation craze, and Iron Fist was created on the kung fu craze of the 70s. By the early 80s, both of those were gone. You know, by the early 80s, you had like ninjas and G.I. Joe, and Mr. T was probably the biggest black celebrity. So you were a few steps removed from Shaft and Enter the Dragon. So they had these two characters, and it was basically like, I just throw them together. And it seemed, people love that book. People go back. And there were some good runs on that book. Like M.D. Bright did some early work. But even as a kid, like looking at that book, I was like, well, like here's two guys that no one else is going to hang out with.
Yeah.
So they have nothing in common other than the fact that they're the same age as a character.
Yeah.
As the 70s.
Yeah.
So let's just throw them together. And then, you know, by the late 80s, it petered out. And I always had a stigma in my mind for characters that weren't in Secret Wars. In my mind, reading Marvel, if you weren't in the Secret Wars, that meant you were not A-list. So like Daredevil didn't make that cut. So there was always something about Daredevil was like, huh, why isn't he that popular? Which is odd because they made a figure in the Secret Wars line.
Right, but
he's not
a Daredevil figure.
But I would look at guys like Daredevil, the new Defenders.
Yeah.
Which at that point was like Beast and Angel and Iceman and Power Man and Iron Fist. Those were guys that couldn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Like when they put the Secret Wars together, it was X-Men and Avengers and Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and Hulk. And that's enough.
Yeah.
So they always seem to be like this just lower tier of, you know, once it's not worth publishing, we're just going to get rid of them. So I had a hard time believing in the validity of a character like Luke Cage.
Yeah, those guys, I subscribe to the idea of like tiers, you know, in the Marvel Universe where you got guys like Fantastic Four, the Avengers, the X-Men. These guys are going to save the world.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, occasionally. Then you've got the guys that are going to save the city.
But you know what? I'm going to argue with you there because Spider-Man is on that level. It's just Spider-Man's so popular that he gets pulled into stories.
He does everything, yeah.
But, you know, Spider-Man on his own in his own book rarely saves the world.
Right.
Unless Doc Ock has a plan to destroy the world, which isn't that often.
Yeah.
Spider-Man really does fit in with Daredevil and Power Man.
He does.
He's just way more popular.
He's more popular and he's more powerful than a lot of those characters. But I think guys like Daredevil, Punisher, the Marvel Knights characters, there is a place for the street-level superheroes who clean up their neighborhoods. I like that idea. And that's why a book like New Avengers was necessary, I think, or got really interesting when they added Luke Cage and a lot of the Marvel Knights characters to that. It was a way to kind of revitalize that franchise and then bring those characters to the forefront. You know, but like I said, with the Luke Cage show, this to me, this show was just kind of like the first time where it's like somebody finally figured out. And like I said, I don't know because I'm not like a big Luke Cage fan. I'm not reading every Luke Cage comic. This just seemed like the first thing starring Luke Cage about Luke Cage and Luke Cage only that was enough of a thing. It's like they figured it out. They figured out how to make this character work without it being a stereotype or without it being a product of blaxploitation or without it being, hey, we don't know what to do with this character. Put him with Iron Fist and have their monthly book. Hey, we want to revitalize the Avengers. Grab him and two or three other guys that never were Avengers and make them Avengers. It's like this seemed like the first thing that was about Luke Cage figuring out Luke Cage, you know?
Well, it goes beyond that because not only do they do it to the character, but I think they do it to blaxploitation. Because within a couple of episodes, I realized they were making a blaxploitation movie with integrity. Which, you know, the blaxploitation movies, they were really cheap B movies and they were really crappy. And the updated takes I'd seen on that were things that kind of made fun of that, like Black Dynamite, which I still love.
That's a great movie.
It's a great movie. And it was a pretty decent Adult Swim animated series. But they were making fun of the cheesy sets and the bad lighting and the
there's several shots with like boom mics deliberately in the frame.
Yeah, and there were people that were overtrained in classical theater next to people that couldn't act at all.
Yeah.
There's that great moment with Baron Vaughn in the beginning who's like, I got to get back to the streets where I come from.
Doesn't he fight the president in that movie?
Nixon. He beats up Nixon.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, but it's going in and saying, how ridiculous were these blaxploitation movies that we as black kids loved because that's what we got, like Dwayne McDuffie.
Yeah.
This is actually going in and going like, what if a blaxploitation movie was what they set out to make? Like, what if it was, what if we made a blaxploitation movie that was as good as The Godfather? Because before The Godfather, there were all these Italian mafia movies.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the 30s and 40s. You know, Cagney and those kind of movies. And they were all cheesy B movies. Angels with Dirty Faces and things like that. But The Godfather was the first thing that was great. And that elevated that whole form to where we got things later like Goodfellas and Casino and The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It became a legitimate art form. I really think this show is doing that for blaxploitation. Because the most important thing about the show for me is not only what they do with Luke Cage, which we agree, but the way they build out that world, I mean, It's like it owes a lot to blaxploitation, but I see a lot of The Wire. And it's not just because there's a shitload of people from The Wire in this. There's a lot of Empire, which is a big show now. There's like New Jack City. They're building a crime tragedy.
Yeah.
So it's not solely about Luke Cage. It's about this Harlem Mafia, which is both Cottonmouth and then May, who's played by Alfre Woodard, who's like the corrupt politician.
Yeah.
And then Diamondback comes in and the show's not really about any one of them exclusively. It's about like a crime empire in Harlem, where you have the guys that are trying to maintain it and keep the legacy of the history of it. There are guys that are trying to get their amount of power and climb the ladder. And then you have a superhero who's coming in and messing it up.
Yeah.
So it's like a great crime epic, but yeah, with a superhero thrown in the middle. And I've never seen that. Whereas Daredevil did some great stuff with the Kingpin, but what they did was build the Kingpin up on one side, Daredevil on the other side.
Right.
Which is what I'd hoped they would do, knowing those characters and put them against each other. This is about a crime dynasty. This is the Corleone family set in Harlem. And except like what would have happened to the Corleone family if Captain America showed up and started, you know, hitting James Caan with his shield? That's what this show is doing, and that's what makes it so interesting to me. We don't get that in Jessica Jones. We don't get that in Daredevil.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I think I like about it is it's, you know, Marvel for the movies has talked about how each movie is a different genre. You know, Captain America is mostly a war movie, but the second one's a political thriller.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and, you know, and
Civil War as well.
Right, and, you know, the Thors are these more grand epic tales, and Ant-Man's a heist movie, and Guardians of the Galaxy is a goofy space thing. That's kind of like what this is. Daredevil was this thing, Jessica Jones was this, Luke Cage is this. They all tie together. You know, they all have concurrent characters. They reference each other. They all exist in the same world. The continuity carries over from one to the next. But they're all distinctly different shows. Even season one and season two of Daredevil are very different shows. You know, obviously still maintaining the storylines that go through. So this will probably get into a little bit of spoilery here. So Cottonmouth, there's two Cottonmouths in comic books. In Marvel.
Right.
There's Cottonmouth, the Luke Cage villain, who's just like a gangster, which I think is who this character was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But then there's also Cottonmouth from the Serpent Society.
I thought that was the same guy, just like later.
It might be, but I don't know for sure. I Googled it, and there was like Cottonmouth, and he was like Luke Cage villain. And then, obviously, there's the Cottonmouth we all know and love is the guy in the purple snake suit.
Yeah, which is a thing I love. Marvel, DC, as I believe, has never done this, but Marvel has a penchant for guys that are named an animal that then wear a costume that look like the animal is eating them.
Yes.
The rhino is the best example. We're like, I'm wearing a rhino suit, cut out the face where the mouth would be, put my face in there.
Right.
And Cottonmouth is that in a purple snake suit.
Right. A grizzly is
that. The grizzly is like that, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys like that. And it's a great look. And more people should do it.
I'm not doing it.
But then Diamondback is another member of the Serpent Society. But Diamondback's usually a woman, right?
Oh, well, that's later. There's two Diamondbacks. Because Diamondback was also a Luke Cage villain.
Oh, okay.
But I think what's great about this show, as we said, they bring it down. And to be fair, Marvel villains have been pretty low-key. None of them have been as visually flamboyant as the heroes. Even Loki. Loki, you know, which everybody says is the most interesting. For the most part, they're normal guys. Look at Baron Zemo in Civil War.
Yeah.
Civil War may be the best Marvel movie, but it's that the villain is just a guy.
It was like the guy
that was in Inglourious Basterds, but he's just a guy.
Yeah, I mean, out of all the villains Marvel's done so far, the best are probably Loki and Kingpin. I'd actually probably put Cottonmouth in there, too, because I think that guy did a great job. I don't know who that is.
But that's what they did. Just kind of create these guys as mob guys.
Yeah.
But give them enough facets.
Right. And that's the thing, you know, it's one thing I really like about the Marvel properties, and I don't want to get into the Marvel vs. DC, but with the Marvel shows particularly, and the Marvel franchise, and the movies and the shows, is they take, and I remember saying this, and if you've listened to the show, or, you know, if you've heard me at the shop ranting about this dumb shit, is I didn't know what they were going to do for Luke Cage, because I don't know anything about Luke Cage, but I don't think Luke Cage has, like, a good rogues gallery, right? And that's part of the reason why he's not a great character. If you don't have a good group of villains to run against, you're not that great.
Right.
Who are the most popular superheroes? It's Spider-Man, it's Batman. Why? Well, they have arguably the two best rogues gallery of villains, right?
Yeah, heroes only as good as his villains.
Right.
And it's one of the reasons people don't like Superman as much.
Right. His villains suck. He's got four good villains.
Yeah, you got Lex Luthor, Doomsday, Mr. Mix's Pitlick.
Darkseid. Brainiac.
I don't even count Darkseid because let's face it, he borrowed Darkseid.
Right.
Darkseid was created for the New Gods. And Darkseid can fight the entire DC universe. Why they haven't, why Crisis isn't always Darkseid, I don't know.
Yeah. But, and so that's what I kind of like. And like I said, whatever version of Cottonmouth they took, if it's the same guy or not, and Diamondback or whoever, that's, Cottonmouth isn't going to be a guy in a snake suit. But he can be a really compelling character, which they did his whole origin in this, where they show him as like a teenager and a kid and all this stuff, really cool stuff. And then, you know, all right, put him in a suit and for the most part, tint the suits purple, like his snake costume. That's enough.
And give him a poster of Biggie.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. And I didn't know... I don't ever do any research for these shows, right? Because I'm terrible at this. But I was listening to NPR, and the guy who I think directed Luke Cage or produced it, or one of the big wig creative guys on this show, a large influence for him was hip-hop. And he's written books about hip hop, and this guy's like, he knows as much about hip hop as like you or I may know about comic books, maybe more. And he's written books about it and stuff. And so that's why like there's a lot of music references. The soundtrack for this show is amazing.
The soundtrack is incredible because not only does it draw from hip hop, there's a lot of like soul and funk and R&B.
Yeah,
a lot of the soundtrack to the blaxploitation movies was all funk because it was the 70s, but he pulls from that. And there's like a James Brown impersonator in one episode in the club.
Yeah, that was great. But like, yeah, he's got the poster in his office of what's his name? And
the Biggie?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the creator's name is Chiyohidari Coker.
Okay. So yeah, and then
so that might have been him.
And I could be mistaken about this, but at one point in the series, one of Cottonmouth's guys gets up and he's like, I've been reading this book and it's about hip hop and this and this. And then Cottonmouth like shoots the guy and laughs. That book might be the book the creator of the show wrote.
I think it is, yeah.
Kind of like poking fun at himself.
Yeah, like a meta thing.
Yeah, kind of like a meta
thing. A guy that would write my book deserves to be shot.
Right. And it's really cool. And that's something where, like I said, it's this guy took two very distinct influences of and weaved them together in this awesome way and gave us this really, really great, and like I said, I haven't finished yet, but he gave us this really great product where, I mean, like well, I said, I didn't notice or really think about the show being like a black show because it was set in Harlem and it's a black community and it's a Luke Cage show. It's like if they make like I don't know, like a fight. It's like if they made a Doctor Strange movie and there was a bunch of magic in it, it'd be like I'd expect to see magic in a Doctor Strange movie because he's a magical superhero, right?
Right.
Yeah. But then I read all that. It's like the Ms. Marvel book's a great example. The Ms. Marvel book, she's a Muslim character. She's written by a Muslim woman who writes the book and created the character. And
This version of the character, not the original Ms. Marvel.
Right. This Kamala Khan, I think is how you pronounce her name. So when she's doing like family stuff, it's all her parents are strict Muslims, practicing Muslims. So they talk about that culture. They talk about religious practices, stuff I don't really know about, specific foods and stuff like this. It's a lot of stuff I'm not familiar with, right? I don't believe in religion, period. And I'm certainly not a practicing Muslim or know anything about practicing Muslim. But I like seeing the different cultural, because it's more about like, oh, look how similar her upbringing is to mine. My parents were strict Catholics and they went to church every week. She goes to a mosque or whatever you call it. And it's interesting to see how different we are, but how similar we are. You know what I'm saying? Right. Where it's like, even the thing with like Luke Cage and like, he's hanging out at like the barbershop and that's like the local hangout. And it's like, there's a historical precedence for barbershops being local hangouts for like black youths and stuff like this. I mean, there's a barbershop.
Three movies that are called barbershop.
There's a barbershop on the kitty corner from my apartment run by black guys and it's all black guys in there. And that's that community center in Rogers Park. And I like seeing different cultures because for white people are pretty boring. And that's all I know. So it was a nice change of pace that I was enjoying. And then you hear all this like crazy people on the internet being, I think we call them racists.
Yeah. I don't know what they were expecting. Like, were they expecting Luke Cage to be the only black guy in
the entire show? I guess. And like I said, it's...
You know, and Claire Temple shows up again.
Right, and she's great.
She is great.
And it's like, you know, they... So they use Misty Knight in this show, and they could have just used, like, a cop. And it could have just been just a made-up cop for the show. But they grabbed a character who's a cop in the comics... and who has a relationship with Luke Cage. She's one of the Heroes for Hire. She's part of that team. It's like, it's cool to see them drag in instead of coming up with... the fucking white corrupt cop that gets murdered by Cottonmouth, he's in the comics. That's one of the characters in the comics who's like a cop that like Luke Cage deals with regularly. So it's like...
Is he a corrupt cop in the comics?
I don't know. I didn't really read the comics. I mean, I just... The Skike or whatever his name is, Skikes. Mm-hmm.
Scarf.
Whatever, scarf. It shows up in the comics. He has like a mustache because this is the 70s and everyone is rocking mustaches. But it's cool to see that. And that's the thing where it's just like, you know, the Iron Fist show is going to come out and they're probably going to introduce Colleen Wing, who is Misty Knight's like partner in crime type character. She's like her Danny Rand, right. You know? And yeah, it's just a weird thing. Like I said, it's... I don't know what people expected the show to be. I mean, look at the trailer. What did you...
Yeah, and you know, as we said, superheroes are so hurting for diversity. And I don't think it's comic creators' fault that they're hurting for diversity. I think it's just, you know, a new character is created every single month. Almost every single issue in books. You know, the new villains, new supporting characters, new sidekick heroes, new books are launched. But... We talk about the same ones over and over again because those are the ones that have stuck. And nobody knows why something sticks. You know, whether it's... I mean, you can argue the merits of whether something is good or bad. You know, but like, why is Spawn considered a relic of the 90s and Deadpool is a vital character? No one really knows. Yeah, there were better stories made with Deadpool. But for some reason, he resonated and lasted. So there have been lots and lots of minority characters... that have thrown out there, but very few have stuck, and Luke Cage is one of them. And to complain that it's not as white as everything else, well, then don't watch it. I mean, you know what? There is never going to be a moment where episode 7 of Luke Cage is going to change Avengers 3.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to follow... Right now, you have to see every Marvel movie pretty much to know what's going on. But you don't have to follow all the shows. I was watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, and I was like, okay, it's proven to me time and time again that I don't need this to watch the movies.
Yeah.
So, like, the only reason to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is if you like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. It's so, not necessary. I haven't watched... I watched only the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, like, scattered episodes of a few of the other seasons. I don't watch it regularly. I never will.
Yeah.
Fine. Right, but it's just like I'm only really sticking with the movies and the Netflix properties because they've proven to be the better stuff they're doing. I never saw all of Agent Carter. None of this stuff is going to affect what the movies are doing.
Right, you're not going to be lost without this stuff. So, you know, if this is a problem for you because it's black, then you have every reason in the world to not watch it. Don't watch it and stop talking about it.
Right.
You know, if you want white shows, well, DC's making 6 of them a week.
And not only that, if you want white shows, turn to any other show. It's like...
Yeah, they don't even have to have superheroes in them.
Right, and that's the other thing, is they're like, this show is racist against white people. And I don't know if you guys have ever read the
definition... There's not enough white people in it to be racist towards them.
Well, not only that, the definition of racism is like... I'm going to butcher this, but the concept is there's a majority... and everyone else is the minority, and it's negativity towards like the minority, right? You can't be racist against white people because we're the majority. It doesn't exist. It's not a thing you can do. So it's just weird.
I disagree. I think you can be racist towards white people if you say, I hate all white people because, I mean, you don't have as much of a ground to stand on.
Right.
But I think racism is blanket hate towards all of a race.
Yeah.
If you are racist, you are prejudiced against that race.
A specific race. Yeah, maybe I'll give
you
that.
Why you can't be racist against nerds. Because they're not a race.
Is that like classist or something?
This is mean.
Genreist. But it's a dumb argument. Like I said, it's, you know, if you're complaining that there's not enough white people in Luke Cage, you're probably a racist. Or super ignorant.
Or and you're because...
And what? I'm like king of ignorance, right? So I don't know what I'm talking about, right? I don't... We're two privileged white people talking about racism.
But what it tells me, if you think Luke Cage is racist, you're just very uncomfortable watching races that are not your own.
Right.
And you're hoping for somebody that is your race to come in so you'll have somebody to identify with. And honestly, you can identify with these characters just emotionally. As you said it with Ms. Marvel.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, does anyone watch like other countries make a lot of movies like Bollywood films and Asian
we don't.
Films? You know, but I'm saying, but do people watch those and be like, oh, I'm pissed. I watched that movie made in Korea. There weren't any white people in that movie. It was just a bunch of Koreans. It's like, yeah, because it was a movie set in Korea, made by Koreans, starring Koreans. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's like, of course there weren't any white people in this movie. Why the fuck would there be?
Yeah, that's a problem with John Woo movies. Not enough white people.
Not enough white people.
Then he started making movies with white people in them. They were not good movies.
So it's a weird argument, and people shouldn't make that argument unless they want everyone to know that they're racist or ignorant.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
So we were recording this on a Sunday. My sister back in my birthday time got me she has season tickets to the Brookfield Zoo or whatever you call it. Part of that deal is they can I don't know anything about this stuff. There's like a behind the scenes thing you could do at Brookfield depending on what section of the park you're in. And you can do, like, feed this animal, pet this animal, this kind of stuff. Well, I haven't been to the zoo since I was, like, or to Brookfield Zoo specifically since I was, like, 8 or 9 or something. So not only going back to the zoo today after so long, super awesome to see all these, like, crazy animals that exist in the world and look at weird fish. We went and did, like, this behind-the-scenes stuff for, like, the Africa animals. And I got to meet a giraffe today and, like, feed a giraffe. I highly recommend the behind the scenes Brookfield tour thing. You have to pay. It's obviously like an extra program, so you pay a little for it. But the people who work there, who are the people that kind of take you behind the scenes, it's kind of like up to them to kind of show you what their job is, and it's kind of open ended. But we fed wild African dogs, which are like undomesticatable animals. You can't like they only look at you as food, you know. They're like a step up above wolves. They're like in the same category. We got to like feed them. We fed these like little gerbil things that I don't know, these like skittish little things. And then the kind of like the main thing for this particular show they have is like feed the giraffes. And giraffes are really tall. Obviously, that's the thing people know about giraffes. People don't know about giraffes is giraffes don't give a fuck about your personal space, but don't get in their personal space. And they're dopes.
I have friends like that on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't post on my wall, but I'm going to post whatever
all
I want.
And they're like dopey animals. They're like very skittish. They're big babies. They're scared. And they're dumb. But the lady said, thing about giraffes is they're smart enough to be giraffes. That's their line. You know, it's like, that's
smarter,
right? Like they can handle grazing and walking around in an enclosure. That's about it. But it was really cool. You see a giraffe and you're like, wow, that's really cool. It's a giraffe. It's a lot different when the giraffe's head is like within like striking distance of your face. It's ridiculous. And they have these long, gnarly, black, weird looking tongues, and they eat lettuce. You get to feed them lettuce. It is awesome. Just a really cool experience. It's one of those, there's a lot of really cool things in the Chicagoland area that I think we take for granted. And Brookfield Zoo is high on that list. Of things that we have access to in this area that maybe a lot of people kind of take for granted, myself included, because it's it's one of the biggest zoos in the country. They have all this. They're like the leader in a lot of conservationist stuff. They have animals at that zoo, or quantities of animals that do they don't have at other zoos. They've got a lot of good programs. This behind the scene things, I'm sure a lot of zoos do similar things like this. But to have a big nationally recognized zoo literally in the store's backyard is something I've taken advantage of. I'd like to take advantage of more in the future. Like I said, my sister has like the year-long pass. Her and Tina have probably gone like dozens of times, but it was just an awesome, awesome day. And like I said, if you haven't been to that zoo and you live in the area, it is, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, Renee takes the boys there a lot.
You guys are always doing stuff
now,
there.
We have a friend that helped runs the education department over there too.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So it's a great zoo. I had a couple of things. I narrowly avoided spending about $1,500 on all the Hot Toys Star Wars figures.
Yeah, when you get to the point where you're pricing them out, that's dangerous territory.
Yeah, well, they Big Bad Toy Store had all of them at once from the 77 original movie, and I was like, oh, if I wanted to spend the money, I could get Luke and Leia and Obi-Wan and Han and Chewie and C-3PO and R2-D2 and Darth Vader. That's the entire cast.
Yeah.
And then I was like, how much will that cost? I'm not getting that. Yeah. But what I did get the last week, Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 2 is back. I think you guys, if you've been listening for a while, know how much I love this show. We did a whole show about it last year. And with the show, which the first episode's already aired, it's fantastic.
The second season?
Yeah. If you like it, you will continue liking it. I've never met anybody that doesn't like Evil Dead or Army of Darkness. But if anybody told me why they didn't like it, I'd be like, yeah, you don't have to like this. Because it's a dumb guy and gore. That's what those movies
are.
Yeah,
the bar is not so high. You know, it's not Shakespeare, you know?
Yeah, I was explaining this to a friend of mine at work who had never... I was talking about Ash vs. Evil Dead, and I found out she hadn't seen any of the Evil Dead movies. And I was like, well, it's kind of like Walking Dead, but it's funny. And it's a... demons possess people whenever they want to, and Evil Dead 2 is just a guy alone in his house while demons attack him over and over. Then he gets a chainsaw for a hand, and I realize I am so far in the weeds with someone that's never seen this. But NECA is making figures from the Ash vs. Evil Dead TV show.
Is it NECA?
NECA, yeah.
It's not NECA?
It's not NECA, because Michael Crawford was on the show a couple of years ago. And he interviewed them, and he said it's not NECA. And it stands for, like, Northeast Collectible Association.
Okay.
So it should be NECA. So I usually say NECA.
Yeah.
But since I was recording this, I said NECA. But they're what McFarlane was in the 90s. Like, they have all the horror movie licenses. They tend to put out Aliens and Predator figures all the time. And then they have other stuff like rarely. Like, they'll do Nightmare on Elm Street.
They've done Godzilla.
Friday the 13th. They've done Godzilla. But they... Planet of the Apes. I have all their original Planet of the Apes figures.
They did Game of Thrones.
No, there's another company that does Game of Thrones. But I know those figures. Yeah. But they have had the license for a while. And Evil Dead is one of those licenses where it's got a strong cult following, but not enough where you always see product. So... I got the Ash vs. Evil Dead figures, and they're some of the best licensed figures I have ever seen. Because the Ash himself has basically Marvel Legends articulation. There's like double elbows, and there's a hidden ab joint, and there's ball joint shoulders and knees. The likeness is dead on.
Yeah.
The thing that amazes me about it is, you know, it's Ash, so he has a chainsaw for a hand, and he's got a shotgun on his back and a blue shirt and khakis. But the likeness is so perfect that they sculpted Bruce Campbell as a guy in his 50s.
Yeah.
So they didn't sculpt like a muscle-bound guy with his face, which a lot of companies would do. They also didn't like do it as a fat guy or an old guy. He's just like a thick middle-aged guy.
Yeah.
But he's perfectly poseable. And he's got a couple of different expressions. There's like a he has a couple of different heads just with like scared expressions and angry expressions and confused expressions. But it's dead on. And one of the best reviews I read about it was on a message board. I go to the Fush.com a lot, which is an action figure message board. I've been going there for 15 years. And one of the guys said, the thing I hate about this figure is that it makes all the other Evil Dead figures look bad.
Oh, wow.
And it's true. I mean, the earliest Army of Darkness figure was made by McFarlane in 2000. And they don't quite hold up. They've done Evil Dead 2, and NECA has done Army of Darkness. And it makes me wish they would go back and do just all the movies
again. And honestly,
again.
If it's NECA or whoever that is doing this new line, and they haven't done those other figures, maybe they will.
Yeah, the only problem with them is because the movies were so low budget, each one was a different film studio. So each one's a different license. So I don't quite know if they only have the TV show right now. But I hope that they keep the line going. I'd like to see the younger characters. I'd like to see Pablo and Kelly as figures. And some more of the demons. Lucy Lawless.
Yeah.
Looks like she has a bigger part this season. NECA does a really amazing job. I mean, if you're into, especially 80s and 90s horror, like I said, they're always doing Aliens. They do a ton of Terminator stuff.
Yeah.
You know, RoboCop, like all of that genre. There's nobody that does better. And you can still find them in Toys R Us, which you can't say about too many companies making this kind of license. So, Ash has been my favorite figure, and I'm just waiting. Next year, Sideshow is doing a new Ash. So,
you don't have any of the Sideshow Ashes, do you?
I have the ones they made. I think I have them downstairs. They're terrible because they're like 15 years old. I think I have Ash and Evil Ash downstairs.
Are you going to get the new ones?
Oh, I'm definitely going to get the new ones because the new one looks like Hot Toys.
Yeah.
In fact, I think my one shelf is going to become Hellboy and Ash.
Yeah.
Which makes
sense.
That
is a team up that we should see.
Yeah. So if you'd like to follow me, I'm at Not In My Book. And if you tweet me, I'll tweet you back. That's where I tell jokes and talk about the podcast. If you want to find out the news, a lot of little announcements. As we said, there was a lot of announcements about Netflix. The Ultimate Spider-Man animated series is ending, and they're replacing it with a more classic Spider-Man series, which they think will coincide with Homecoming. They announced that today. There are rumors that Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill may be making a Hush animated series.
Yeah.
And not a series, but a movie. There is confirmation that William Shatner is playing Two-Face in the next Adam West animated movie.
Which is amazing.
Yep. So there were a lot of little things, and we posted that. There's a new trailer for Planet of the Apes. There's a ton of stuff going on this weekend. This was a big convention. We post all that on Facebook. So you can just go to, just search Caffeinated Comics on Facebook. And, because there is no longer a store in San Francisco that brewed coffee and sold comic books, we come up first.
That's right.
And, if you would like to go to a store that doesn't brew coffee, but has soda,
yes,
and is next door to a couple of good coffee shops and sells you comics, you can visit Steven.
I'm always at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Thank